Welcome to Serenity, a service for your well-being. I'm Peggy Nichols, and with my spirit guide, Anthony, we're going to be your host for the next hour. Before we get started tonight, I'd just like to remind people who are listening, please, we do welcome call-ins. So if you'd like to give us a call during any of our shows, the new 800 number is 1-888-627-6008. And I'd also like to have you visit my website, SerenityPeggyNichols.com. Here you can see all the services that I offer, and I have three wonderful CDs that will help assist you in self-chakra tune-ups and past life regressions. So I'm now going to introduce you to my wonderful guest. She is a very busy lady, and she's back in from Canada. She's a writer, a journalist. She's been in broadcasting for years, consigned to do documentaries, and she's presently writing an awesome book called Orders, Habits, and Vows. May I please introduce this wonderful friend of mine, Madonna Hamill. Good evening, Madonna. How are you?
Peggy, I guess you could tell me. How am I doing?
Let me come into you.
I'm doing great.
I'm seeing butterflies in your chakra, your emotional chakra area, but that's good because I have those also.
Oh, that's good. Excellent. Yeah. Great. You know, that's interesting. Butterflies, actually, I've been seeing a lot of them lately, and I'm taking them as great messengers, so I'll go with that.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I'd like to probably give a little bit of background, if I may, to those listening tonight. Mm-hmm. We kind of go back several years ago, and actually where I was on the other side of the microphone and the interview, and we had this wonderful interview, and which actually, people, if you go to my website, you'll be able to click on, it's called In My Own Words, and it's a wonderful hour interview that Madonna did with me at Serenity, and we talk about so many subjects. I think you will definitely enjoy it. But I also had the pleasure of doing sessions on this young lady, from aura chakra balancing, energy reading, and past life regressions. So we have definitely a long history, but this woman is so amazing.
Oh, thanks, Peggy. Yeah, you know, I think that in terms of doing the interview with you, I think that's one of my favorite things to do because I've been doing journalism for 15 years, radio journalism, and my job has been to do profiles of people. And what I've learned over the years is that everybody has a fantastic story. There are no boring people. And the gift is being able to ask the right questions to get people to talk about themselves, because just very often nobody asks them. Nobody cares to ask them. It's kind of the service in my industry in terms of writing and broadcasting is just to listen. And when you're listening, you can pick out things, as you know, Peggy, with energy, right? People have different energy levels, and you can tell even in their voices when there's a lull or a hesitation or an excitement, then you dig deeper because that's where the story is. So you are a great interviewer. You're a great storyteller. It takes very little to get you going.
Well, and you get two for one because you get Anthony also.
I know. You know what? I think there's a real niche there. What a market. If I could start actually just doing interviews with people's spirit guides, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Oh yes. Anthony's smiling down at me and he's going, no, he prefer I take center stage, but he's right beside me, so he's going to be there too.
Okay, now I have a question for you, and I know that this is just a professional occupational hazard. I can't help asking questions even when I'm being interviewed. Do spirit guides help give your answer to a question? Like if you're asking me something, is my spirit guide helping me give the answer, even if I don't even know it?
Oh, definitely. Yes, they do. It's almost like your thoughts, your words become one. You just kind of mesh together. And it's so wonderful. It's like Anthony can complete a sentence for me, or vice versa. We know. It's like our thoughts become just that one. And it's so exciting. And it's just a part of me. If he wasn't there, I would feel so empty and so lost, because it is that extra, if you will. It's just having his energy wrapped around me and his thoughts and that endless conversation. And of course, when we've done interviews before, you know, you'd always see me look up at Anthony and just smile, because we don't need the words. It's just telepathically our communication. Mm. And my husband has learned along the way that when he has a conversation with me, it's a three-way conversation. Because Anthony
okay
is,
that?
Yeah, he's going to put in his 2 cents worth every time, let me tell you.
So can ancestors, because this is kind of leading into my book, I'm curious about, can ancestors be spirit guides?
Oh, yes, they can.
Okay.
Absolutely, honey. And how wonderful, because they're with a loved one, and maybe they were in the other realm before you were even born. They still know, and that love and that connection that they have with you, and they want to be a part of your life. And since physically they couldn't be there, how wonderful they can be in spirit.
Okay, and that makes sense.
Yes, and I,
sense.
Well, and thinking of that, you have got to tell this audience about this wonderful book you're writing, but also some of the history that led up to the writing of this, because even talking with you the other evening, I was just in awe of the history behind this.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's pretty incredible. It's pretty incredible. Okay, so let's go back to 1995 when I moved from the West Coast to Quebec in Canada, because that's where my roots are from. And one day, my friend brought home a book, and he said, look at this book. Your ancestor is in this book. I open up the book. It's the history of women in Quebec. And there is Marie Morin, M-O-R-I-N, and she is the first nun born in Canada. So the first young woman who decides to become a nun who is born in Canada, which would mean, considering that she was born in the 1620s, her parents having come over from France in 1608, she would probably have been the first nun born in North America. So here she is, my ancestor, first nun born in Canada. By the way, her brother was the first priest born in Canada, probably the first priest born in North America as well. I think I can safely say the first born in North America. Now, what I didn't know, and I knew the Morins were in my family because that's my mother's mother's name. What I didn't know is that Marie was commissioned by her mother's superior to keep the diaries of the nuns, because this group of nuns were the women that basically settled and created, with the help of explorers and with the help of fur traders, Montreal, as we know it today. It was called Ville-Marie in the day, in the 1600s. So here she is, she's keeping these journals, she's keeping these diaries, amazing stories about these women who came over from France, because when she was a nun, she was 13 years old, and there was no one going to stop her. She wanted to be a nun. She was called to be a nun. Her parents were, oh, my God, you're too young. You can't do this. No, this is what I want to do. I'm called to do it. Her superiors were young women who came over from France who could have sunk in ships, and some ships did sink. That was just one of the things, the threats you put up with at the time. Came over, built these convents in the middle of, now if you can imagine, so think of, you know, Michigan, but think of Ontario, think of North America in the 1600s, early 1600s, when it was all wild animals and wild woods and cold weather and food that you would have to know what to pick and what not to pick because it's all wild too. And here's young women from well-off homes, because most of them had to have a dowry to be part of a convent, and they have made the decision to come over here and, you know, live and build these convents surrounded by warring tribes, because the Iroquois did not want them there and the Huron didn't want them there either. But the Huron decided, okay, you know what, we're going to actually make a living out of this. We're going to show these French people where the rivers are, where the Mississippi is, where the fur is. You know, we're going to actually benefit from this. So here are these young women living in this convent, waking up to snow on the bed in the morning, eating basically wild pumpkin, something they've never had before, nursing the wounds of not just the soldiers that came over to establish the city, but the Indian tribes, the Iroquois and Huron, were also, you know, wounded in battles. And this is what they did for a service. And she was to record it all. So here's like a gripping yarn, whether you believe it or not, whether you tend to like the nuns or not, it's a gripping yarn. This was written in the 1700s. Flash forward to last year when I am in Montreal working on a story, another story for radio, and I decide to go to the museum where this book, this diary that she wrote, is still existing. And it's this huge, heavy tome with these onion skin paper and, you know, that beautiful long script that people wrote in the time, and it's under glass. And I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, here I am. And that's where I, you know, I'm thinking, do ancestors operate as spirit guides? Because I got a chill. And maybe you just get a chill because it's your ancestor, right? But there was something there going, really pursue this, Madonna. So I'm looking at this book. And when I leave, I thank the women at the museum. They go, Madame, come here. Viens ici. There is the book translated from 17th century French into English last year. It took the woman who translated it 12 years in the making.
And 12 years.
Book. Yeah. So I got to read the book. And here's what happened. I started to read, as I think maybe happens to people when they go back, maybe when they decide they're going to find their roots and they go back to where their ancestors came from in Europe or wherever, they start to understand themselves better. Now, I wouldn't have thought that there was anything about me in a 17th century nun. But what came to mind was, okay, these are very courageous women. They were also very... they had a piercing faith. It seems that they never had any doubts. And they were inexhaustible. They were always exhausted, but they never gave up. They worked hard. They slept very little. And they were exposed to a lot of cold, hunger, and disease. But the thing that really clicked for me is, wow, my family and Catholicism in my family goes all the way back to these nuns. So what has that done to me? Does it get in my genes? Is it in my DNA like other things, like being predisposed to, I don't know, alcohol or to worry over the centuries because, well, everyone in my family worried, so I worry? Is it like having a gene that maybe makes you more predisposed to a cancer or diabetes? What does that do to me to have that kind of fierce religion or spirituality? Marie, when she wrote about the nuns that she worked with in the diary, she called them spiritual Amazons. They were not what a lot of people think of nuns, these timid little mice who don't want to have anything to do with the world. They actually had a lot to do with the world. They were right in the middle of the world, and they were tough cookies.
They had to survive.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to rethink. Okay, first of all, I wanted to rethink about these nuns, because a lot of them in the day entered the convent so that they could study, because you got an education in the convent. You learned to write. You were a scribe. You were a teacher of languages. Or you learned music, and you taught music, and you were a choir master. Or you were an herbalist. Now, those were the pharmacists of the day. And one of the nuns that she wrote about would walk into the woods, and nobody left the confines of the convent, because you could be butchered easily by, you know, an angry native who really didn't want you there. And she would just march out there, pull a bunch of what they thought were weeds, come back into the convent, boil them up, make a poultice or a herb tea, and heal the patients. How did she know what these weeds were? How did she know what these herbs were? Where did this come from? Because in France, it isn't the same, you know, foliage. So this is what these women were doing. Maybe they just didn't want to be confined to a 17th century household. Maybe they didn't want to be told what to do with their lives, or, you know, be raised the way their family thought. Maybe they wanted to get away and be adventurers, and maybe that's what a woman did in the 1600s when they wanted to choose another option besides marrying somebody their parents wanted them to marry. Maybe they became a nun and went to the New World. So I looked at them differently, and I thought, okay, I was raised Catholic, and I've inherited a lot of things that I really wish I didn't. One of them being the classic form of keeping people in line with humiliation. And you know, make no mistake about it, the word humiliation, mortification, unworthiness, repentance, evil, those words pop up a lot in Marie Morin's diary. But so also does the word courage, and the word grace, and the word redemption, and a great belief in something bigger than them that they never doubted. So while I may have inherited a lot of negative aspects of Catholicism, I have also inherited a belief in grace, a belief in redemption, a belief that there's a point to all this, and a belief in a world beyond me that I don't understand, a great mystery that I have no problem fitting into my worldview. It's just I believe it, and I am never in doubt. So this is, you know, I'm really going on here, Peggy, but what this brought me, this story of this ancestor, was we all have an inheritance. I started reading a lot of spiritual memoirs, because another one of my jobs is I'm a book reviewer for the Globe and Mail in Toronto. And so that's what I ask them. When you have a new spiritual memoir, I would love to review it. So in reading people's memoirs, especially of their spiritual pursuits, I noticed that while they may talk about what they're looking for in the future or in the present, and they may talk about their parents' religion, there's not a lot of talk about ancestors going all the way back down the family tree. And I find that fascinating, because I think every ancestor carries or promotes further down the line a stronger and stronger notion of a family religion. Even if you think you're not affected by it, you know, you hear people say, oh yeah, well, you know, my parents are Catholic, but I never went to church. But they still talk the vocabulary. They will still talk and live that worldview that they inherited. So this is partly what this book's about. It's like, okay, this is my story. Here are some questions. Here are some thoughts about what maybe your story is. So I give you a chance to respond to that.
Oh, yes. What's so amazing, you know, when you're talking about them, the enthusiasm, honey, about your ancestor. And, you know, and what they went through, I have to believe that, you know, they were definitely spiritually guided. You know, they had to go through that style of living and be where they're basically not supposed to be by, you know, man's ideal. And just like you say, going out there, knowing what to pick, what to bring back, and to make that poultice and or the teas, you know, you have to believe that they were touched by the hand of God, if you will, and just spiritually guided. And how amazing that this young woman, you know, assigned to write this diary. And oh my, I can only fathom the energy around that when you were standing there in its presence. Because energy has no boundaries. We've talked so many times about it, that here is her imprinting. Oh my God, Madonna.
I mean, thought of that. So you're saying that energy has no time boundaries as well. So even though this diary was written in the 1600s, its energy is still very much alive.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, my dear. It's like our thoughts, our energies, you know, it is casted out there. It's like, how do you rein it back? It is out there and for infinity. And in the book, you know, having that imprint, that's what's so wonderful about books and writing. And that's why I enjoy talking each week, you know, to authors, because it's something that's handed down through generations. It's not only the words, but your touch, your imprinting you in this piece. And those who are very much aware and sensitive, you will feel them. It's, you know, it's almost, I can see her hand placing it over yours, Madonna, and that she's imprinting with you. And
so
I think this.
Can I ask you how I could encourage? I mean, okay, if she is already doing it, how I can be better in touch with her in order to help me write this book?
Just ask her, Madonna. Just ask her to be there, to come forth, and that, remember how the importance we talked about your chakras being in order and clean and working properly, keeping that third eye, honey, clean and open, and you will hear her, you will see her, and it's almost, and she will be that guiding hand with you, that inspiration. Can you just? Just for a moment, step back and fathom how exciting this must be for her, that this like legacy lives on through you.
And I feel strongly about her book, mine, leaving mine out of it. The fact that this book has been translated into contemporary English means that people can now read her history. And I think it should be on the bookshelves alongside all those other history books. You know, the famous, the Jesuit relations that's used as a history book that the Jesuits kept. Well, she wrote this before them. And I know we studied that in school, and I'm sure in the States everyone has an equivalent of a history through the eyes of clergy, but I don't know why we don't know about her. We should.
Well,
and I'm glad that it's in English now. And I'm glad that I can take bits and pieces out of her book that have some kind of relevance to our lives today, because it's heavy going. I mean, you know, even if it's translated in English, it's still like nearly 400 pages of thinking from a 17th century mind, and it's not always relevant to people. But I want to show how that thread of belief and worldview and notions of grace and faith carry on. And, you know, I also want to talk about the scary words. There's a wonderful book by one of the world's preeminent writers on spirituality and religion. And her name is Kathleen Norris. And she's written a book called Amazing Grace, A Vocabulary of Faith. And when she decided to go back into her own faith that she was raised in, she had a really hard time with the language because it's pretty heavy-handed. And so she called the words, some of the ones I've mentioned to you, like mortification and humiliation and, sin and evil, etc., she called them scary words. But she didn't want those words to deter her from understanding her own personal beliefs in a God, a grace, a spirit, a divine, whatever you want to call it. So she sat down and she took the words apart in her own head and asked other people what they thought about those words. And I think it's a great exercise for all of us. So the words that I have chosen for the title of this book, because it pertains to a nun in my family, is orders, habits, and vows. And, of course, I'm playing with words because while nuns belong to specific orders, and by the way, I have had nuns in my family up until my mom's generation. My generation is the first one that does not have nuns in it. My aunt, Cecile, is still alive. She's 93. She lives in Spokane, Washington. She lives in a retirement, an international retirement home for Sisters of Providence. It's a fascinating place to go because these women are from all over the world. And so I'm looking at like a history of nuns. And so I'm looking at our inheritance, our faith inheritance, our spiritual inheritance, whatever we want to call it, worldview inheritance, through the eyes of our orders, whatever our specific order that we belong to is, which might just simply be, you know, a group, a community, a gang, a culture. Our habits. Now, there's a great play on words because, well, of course, a nun's habit is her actual outfit. We wear habits. We might call them our uniform. We might call them a costume. We might call them the latest fashion or a trend. We might not call it anything, but we wear a certain thing as a you know, to show that we're an artist or we're a business person. But then also habits. I want to play with the word habits, you know, like patterns of behavior. And then vows, because we all make vows. I mean, the nuns make the vows of chastity, poverty, and obedience. And we make marriage vows. We vow to clean our room, you know, or to never smoke again. Some vows, pledges, promises, whatever. So I'm trying to consider that even though we might not belong to religious orders, we do have our own system, a worldview, and it follows a certain set of rules. And
yes,
could those rules be affected by a very religious set of rules that our ancestors passed down to us? That's what I'm trying to look at.
Well, and I think it's going to be an interesting book, Madonna, just, again, because the history of your ancestor here, my God, what she went through. I mean, I want to just read the book just to put myself in her shoes and what she went through. If nothing more, what an appreciation of where we have come. You know, 2011, you know, we have Skype. We have, you know, what we're able to do here, interview people from around the world. Wow, what a distance we've covered. You know, as I've had spirits come in before, and it's so amazing when they walk through the house and they look at the electronics, and it's like, oh my, you know, as they're intrigued. It's because they didn't exist back, and of course, in their timeline, and it's almost like they're overwhelmed. But there's an appreciation. But it's funny when I see them come through and they'll look around, they scratch their head and like, what's this all about? And sometimes explaining is not an easy task. But how wonderful spirits can go from, you know, generation to generation, from realm to realm. And the effect, you know, going back to those imprints of our ancestors, you know, like you say, our DNA, it does move forward. Because they are a part of us. And it's amazing that we have certain likes or dislikes, and we wonder why. Yeah. Where did that come from?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Certain fears, certain preferences, certain values, you know, where do those come from? I have so many friends in Quebec that have pushed against Catholicism because it was very heavy-handed. Pre-Vatican II, when the church finally entered the 20th century, entered, you know, God, the 19th century. And yet, I still see them operating from a very strong sense of values about right and wrong and goodness and charity and modesty. That comes from the fact that they grew up in a very Catholic world and their parents were very Catholic. And maybe, you know, those were the good elements that stayed with it, even though they would claim, no, I have nothing to do with it anymore. Well, I mean, every boy has the name Joseph as his first name and then his other chosen name. And every girl has Marie as her first name still to this day in Quebec because of Mary and Joseph. And yet they can say, I'm not at all affected by Catholicism. So I think it's an we make assumptions because we don't know differently. So yes. I'm just saying, let's look differently. And I want to add one more element to this because how am I going to phrase my questions to people about habits, orders, and vows? I'm going to create my own order. This may sound sacrilegious, but I am basing it on something that my own grandmother did, Marie-Laure Morin, who at the age of 16 left Quebec, migrated to Saskatchewan, and took the train. Now, she had sisters waiting for her in Saskatchewan, and they were already nuns, and they had the gall to suggest that she disguise herself as a nun because nuns traveled free, and she did. I wouldn't have the nerve. I would be afraid of being struck dead or, worse, somebody else dying, and they'd want the last vows from me, and I couldn't, you know, I mean, the last rites. So I thought, how would I do that? How would I follow in her footsteps? Because, you know, before I started in journalism, I was in performance. So I took on characters all the time. Well, I'm going to create my own order. I'm not going to pretend I'm a Catholic order, which opens up a whole world. And I put this one question. If I put a question out to your listeners, here's my question. If you were to create your own religious order, now for a nun, it's the Sisters of Charity, Sisters of Mercy, Sisters of Providence. But you could say the brothers, if you're a man, what would it be? And so I'm still in the process of deciding exactly what would the name of my order be. Would it be the Sisters of Infinite Curiosity? Would it be the Sisters of the Wild Surmise? Would it be the Sisters of the Great Paradox? Would it be the Sisters of the Seasons? You know, what would my group be? I think it's a wonderful question to ask. And once I've created the order, then I can design my own habit. Then I can decide, well, what would a sister of that order wear? What would I wear? You know, would it be a veil? Would it be a scarf around my head? Would I have a rosary around my neck? Would I have a string of Buddhist prayer beads? Who knows? And then from that, I would also create my own vows. What would my promise be to me, to my creator, and to humanity? Now, once I've created that order and I am a nun on a train, then I will start asking people those questions. What is your religious inheritance? How has it affected you? Do you believe it has affected you? What are your habits and what are your orders? Not just your religious group, but what orders do you feel you need to follow in this lifetime? And what are your vows?
Oh, how excited would that be?
I'm not asking for much.
But I could see you doing that. Absolutely. Oh, that is going. So do you have a timeline when you think you're going to be doing this?
Well, the trip I am hoping to do in the autumn, because I'm still just finishing the first half, which is the story of Marie Morin. And it's pretty well done. Like my, you know, what I've told, my sharing that I learned about her and her quotes and discussing orders, habits, and vows through my research from spiritual memoirs and the history of nuns. There's a wonderful book about nuns in America. What is the state of nuns in America? If you just want to read that book, it's called In the Name of God. Can't remember the author's name off. I know it's in my stack here, bibliography, but that is a really beautiful book, and that takes a look at contemporary nuns, and you'll get a stronger sense of how the range of radicalism in terms of nuns going out and working on the street, or you know when they went down to El Salvador and worked there. So there's a lot of research, just a lot of research around what makes a nun. And that all that took the first half. So I think by the time that this should be finished by the end of this summer. And then we'll do the second half, which is the actual trip. And then we'll take it from there. I know I have people that are interested in it. And, yeah, it's just a question of getting it out there.
Well, if a publishing company doesn't pick this up, my dear, I think they're crazy. But you know, we've had many discussions, and we know the imprinting of our ancestors and genealogy, and so many people are doing that and going back. Mm-hmm. And I'm so intrigued at what you're doing now. In a different manner for people to have a hold of their ancestry that, and it's called what, the memory bank, if I'm correct, and that you're...
That's right, yes.
So
well,
can
that,
you tell...
That's a segue so much into this, it sort of happened parallel. The memory bank is something that I, being very encouraged by my partner, James, and he has... living in Marshall here and meeting a lot of older couples with great stories, he started recording some of them. And knowing that I was interested in people's stories, just that being the nature of my work as a writer-broadcaster, interviewing and doing profiles on people, we started talking about, you know, people need to... keep these stories alive. I mean, I was lucky that my ancestor was commissioned to write a book, but most people don't have books behind them. And what are people going to know about their parents or their grandparents? And what are they going to pass on to their children? What are companies that are folding all around us now, what are they going to have as memories when they're rich with skill and insight and wisdom employees retire? And I felt badly when my own Canadian Broadcasting Corporation ended up laying off very, very gifted mentors who were not just gifted but really good teachers. And they didn't even, to me, they should have had sessions where they could sit down and impart their wisdom. Well, I decided that I'm going to start offering my services by making, because I've always been a documentary maker for radio, why not make family documentaries? So in the same style, now instead of radio, it's going to be video. I am making videos of, maybe it's a parent who wants to pass down a story to a child. Maybe it's a child who wants to record his parent's story before they die. Maybe it's an employee who wants to go one last time into the place he worked for 30, 50, 40, 50 years and record his life as an employee. Maybe it's, now I have met a woman who wants me to record some family stories that she is not brave enough to tell until after she dies. So I am recording her story, and I'm going to be with her in important rooms in her house and her garden, so she can tell the story, and then she wants to put with her will so that it isn't viewed until she's passed. And I'm calling it the memory bank because it's a treasure that should be in everyone's bank forever. And we need to keep these stories alive. It's all about keeping stories alive, really, isn't it, Peggy? This is what it is.
It is. Well, actually, I was just, you know, talking to my husband earlier that, you know, what a wonderful thing you're doing here with a memory bank, because, you know, just kind of flashing forward, you know, my father and grandfather were seers, and my grandmother and her mother and before her were all shamans. And this is certain stories that I've had the pleasure of hearing. But after me, it's, it worries me, because where are those stories? Where do they continue the memory of what, you know, my father did, and his father, and my grandmother, you know, and she too going out and getting herbs and you know, bark off trees and doing potions and, you know, being called into the hospitals to help people that the doctors couldn't assist. I mean, and I have in my presence her own healing beads. And when I hold them, Madonna, it's just like a magic and a power comes from them. And not having children, you know, I wonder, who am I going to pass these on to?
Wow.
Because they shouldn't be lost, but they need to be in the right hands and not just thrown in a box and looked as costume jewelry. I mean, this is a powerful woman that used these for healing, and her mother lived to be 107, and her life was devoted to healing. And, you know, and I just may have to be hiring you, my dear, to do a memory bank of my own, because somewhere someone has is going to need this. And if I can help even someone along the way who listens to these stories, that listen to yourself, you know, knowing that you're different from a child, you know, and how, you know, the stories of my grandmother, that she knew as I just knew. And so this is, again, kind of like that DNA, how things are, I think, passed on. Having a wonderful psychic years ago look at me, and she goes, "Oh my God, your grandmother is around you, and her mother," and learning through her eyes and her hearing her stories, that it awakened so much in me that it was there, but they were like that story, the key that opened me up even more. And so this is so crucial, and I just hope, you know, those who are listening and those that we come in contact with, jump on this bandwagon, you know, record, write those stories, because it may be the next generation, that grandchild, maybe the great-great-grandchild that is different.
And, you know, we need to know, I find it very healing to know that maybe one of the reasons that I always react with shame or guilt in situations, I don't know why I feel such an extreme feeling, I can go, oh, okay, that's an inheritance. That's not partly just me being crippled by it. It's something that the family has passed down, and I can let go. There are things that we can let go of as desperately as we need to know and hang on to gifts. We can also let go of burdens when we learn about family. You know, I mean, even people who might not, you know, you can pass on the story to say, well, you know, I didn't realize that my grandfather, I just thought he was just an evil, evil man because he was so moody. Well, he turned out he was an alcoholic, and I didn't know that. And now here's the story, and now I can piece the pieces together. Or, you know, well, what happened to so-and-so? She just disappeared. Well, it turned out that she had a child out of wedlock. Or, how come so-and-so knew, how could they know exactly to say the right thing to me all the time? Well, they were psychic. They had the gift. Oh, maybe I have the gift. Wow. Never occurred to me. You know what I mean? And the whole thing about history, some history should not repeat itself, but it will if we don't learn it. But also, where do I know if I'm going if I don't know where I came from?
Exactly. Well, even when you go to the hospital, Madonna, they give you this paperwork. What do they ask? Your family history. You know, was there cancer? Mm-hmm. You know, was it this or that? Because it gives them an insight to focus, okay, maybe this is a problem you're having. So that history of our family is very, very crucial. And it's sad that, you know, those who don't know, you know, who their father is, or maybe they were adopted, that finally they know there's a difference. Why don't I feel like I belong to these people who I call mom and dad? And then, you know, their health, their DNA is going to be so different. I think children have the right to know. And I think
go ahead.
As, you know, parents or as adults, we need to be able to give them that.
Yeah.
They deserve it.
And the truth will set you free. The truth will set you free. And if there's one thing I would love to be able to do, you know, if it could be my calling, it would be that the truth is the truth. You should not feel ashamed of your truth. You should be proud that you are living in your truth, because then you're living through your center. And you're really living. You're not acting. You're not playing at it. You're not pretending. You're living, because you're living your truth. And I wonder if maybe, you know, the generation younger than us, maybe there's more of an interest in history now, because there certainly seems to be, but it might be because people are less of a stigma around family stories that might seem shady, you know? And I know I have a friend who curiosity trumps her fear every time, and I love that, because they're the two sides of the same coin. And if you can be more curious than ashamed or afraid, then you can learn so much about yourself. And wouldn't it be lovely if people could just feel free to tell their truth and go after their truth and learn their truth and share it with their family, and then everybody just gets to be themselves.
Exactly. I remember a few years ago, I was doing an aura chakra cleansing on a woman, probably in her latter 20s. And of course, as you know, I read the energy, and they hold the ages. And your first chakra, of course, that's where you're born, the imprinting of your birth up to the age of 7. And I always look at the energy of the mother and the father. And the energy came and it left, and another new energy came in. So that definitely tells me that this woman was adopted, that the parents that gave her birth left, and these new parents that raised her were not her real parents. And I looked at her and I said, the mother and father you have, do you ever question that they are your mom and dad? And she got this horrible look on her face, and I said, did you ever think you were adopted? And, you know, of course, she's looking at me like I'm crazy. I said, let's do some comparisons, you know, the hair, the eyes, and, you know, the manner. And so now the question is there. Well, I said, you really need to go back and ask your parents, are they truly the ones that gave birth to you? And I said, you have a right to know.
Yeah.
And so we finished the session, and she left. And later on, I discovered that she did ask. She was adopted. And then it started her journey to find her real parents. And I wasn't trying to cause trouble from the people that raised her and loved her. But she had a right to know.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, people think, well, I'm not going to say this, or I'm not going to do that, for their protection. You know, it's like a parent that is just hovering over and not allowing a child, you know, to go out and have the bruises and the boo-boos. You know, it's life. And because what was going to happen later on if she had a problem in her health? You know, what was she going to do? All of a sudden, you know, blood tests with her parents.
Right.
You're not mine. You know, people, they do such an injustice, because they don't want the truth to be out there. And I just, you know, and I'm with you, Madonna. I'm all about truth. And it may hurt, but we need to voice that. And children have rights. And I think as parents, they get away from that. And it's like, I'll tell you if I need to, or you don't need to know basis. No, it's their life. It's their journey too. Let them have the tools. Then let them decide what they want to do with it. It's not, your child. You don't own them. Let them use their minds.
Yeah. Yes, but, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing, you know, of course, you know, I'm an avid fan of past life regressions, because these are our stories. These are our chapters. And I think those who journey and they go back and look at their past lives, it's like reading those different chapters of yourself. And it just makes a lot more sense of this chapter.
It can really explain what seems like irrational behavior in this life when you understand the triggers that come from the past. That I can say that from firsthand experience, having done that with you. And you know, one of the things that I would love listeners to realize that has been said by many a healer, that you don't have to be, and I didn't know this, that when you are going through a past life regression, you are not out of control. You're not helpless. you're conscious. And active imagination has a lot to do with it, in the sense that, and you warned me ahead of time, and I've heard other people say this too, you might, an image might come to mind immediately, and you might go, oh, well, what does that have to do with anything? I imagined that. But that is the entire point. Why that image and not one of 100 others? That image came to you first, that means something. And even Carl Jung said, waking imagination is more powerful than dreams, because what you imagine says something. The person next to me might not have ever imagined that. So that's the whole point. So when you took me through mine and I imagined myself wearing, you know, a certain jacket, and I had a man's hand, and I was walking in the south, the southern states, it explained to me why my first degree was in the literature of the American South. I've always been fascinated with the South. I don't know why. And there's a lot of other stuff in there that I don't even want to go into because it's pretty personal, but it made sense. And I was about to write it off because, well, I'm awake here and I'm imagining this. And I always thought, oh, past life regression is that you just go off in some kind of trance and images just jump up unbeknownst to you, and there you go, that's your past. But you are seeing it and speaking it, and it's coming up in your mind as it's happening. And it's important to know that, because you can practice active imagination whenever you want.
Oh, and the mind is a wonderful thing. It truly is.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm looking at the clock and thinking, your poor other guest didn't get it.
Well, no, Madonna, I'm just so thrilled, honey, and this hour has gone by so quickly, and Mr. Zeth's going to be coming on here momentarily to let me know it's time to sign off. But
sorry to interrupt, but can I let people know that if they have stories to share about their faith inheritance or religious inheritance in their family, that they can, I'm inviting them to contact me, to email me, or if they have a memory bank they want to be kept?
Yes, please.
Email me?
Yes, and please give them that email, my dear.
Okay, so it's Madonna, which is spelled just like that singer, who, by the way, is a cousin on my mother's side. Not that it means anything to me, but Madonna, M-A-D-O-N-N-A, at Madonna Hamel, so that's all one word, and Hamel is Hamel.com. So, I also have a website, MadonnaHamel.com, if people want to look at it. Now, that's basically my documentary from radio, but it'll give people a sense of what I do. And as soon as this book gets up and running, I will definitely get those stories up on a site as well and let people know where they can get it. But I would love to hear people's views on their orders, habits, and vows. I would love to hear that.
Well, your listening listeners, get to her and let her know your stories. She's an amazing woman, and we'll look forward to this wonderful, wonderful book that hopefully will be out by next year. Madonna, a pleasure always to talk with you. Thank you so much for sharing this hour with me, and I will be talking to you probably tomorrow at Serenity.
Yeah. I'll be talking to you. I love what you have reminded me, that my ancestors are with me now, and I just have to call them because I need their help with it.
Oh, they're with you, honey.
I appreciate you having me.
Well, thank you so much, dear. And I'm going to have to sign off with my listeners. So tune in next Monday at 8 o'clock on BBS Radio 1. And I'm Peggy Nichols, and along with my wonderful guide, Anthony. We hope you have a wonderful evening. Good night.